The Red Sox are playoff bound after finally winning the American League East, and they are back-to-back American League East champions for the first time in club history. And the Patriots, they're looking pretty average after four games. It's Monday, October 2nd, 2017. I'm Chris Gasper, and you're listening to the premiere episode of Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We'll be here every day talking sports with you. And who better to talk with than Dan Shaughnessy, sports columnist from the Boston Globe. Dan, it took the Red Sox a while, but they did actually clinch the American League East. They finally got it done. I know there were a lot of nervous people as it came down to the penultimate game, and the Yankees were sort of charging here, but they didn't collapse. They got it done. It never gets old when you're able to win a division, and no matter how you get it, it feels good. Although, when I think back to last season, that was odd, clinching it on a Mark Teixeira walk-off grand slam in New York. So this was a lot better against the Astros on Saturday.
And Kimbrel deals. Strike three! Strike three! And the Red Sox are the champions of the American League East for the second consecutive year.
First of all, let me just say, being here for the inaugural episode of Season Ticket, it's kind of like the moon landing or the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. I mean, you know, years from now, they'll look back and talk about this day in our studio here, the first Season Ticket. Having said that, Chris, the Red Sox thing, I thought it was so much better on Saturday than it was last year. I was in New York last year, the goofy, you know, Joe Kelly gives up the grand slam, Kimbrel walked the bases loaded. They had this hideous defeat, and it was one of the rare times both teams were celebrating at the same time. The Yankees had a dog pile out there. They weren't making the playoffs. That was their moment. Red Sox went in and said, hey, what do we do? Okay, we'll open the champagne. This time, they win in the field. They outright win the division with a game in hand. They know they don't have to pitch Chris Sale on Sunday. Those were all good things. And I thought, you know, watching the celebration, the champagne, the beer, the interviews, the cellophane over the lockers, all the usual stuff, there was a tone in there of relief and exhaustion almost. It was like, oh, it's been a long year. Oh, yeah, we've been through a lot. It wasn't quite as like, come and get them, you know, like joyous and moving ahead. There was a lot of just exhaling, I thought, about it. And I think some of that's owed to playing here, the way the season went, very uneven season. And then the manner in which they finished after that great road trip, 8-1 or whatever it was, and you come home and, you know, you lose 4 out of 5 out of the gate at home, and it was just a strange thing. So now it's all ahead of them, and we'll see where it goes. It's a very interesting team, a team that can beat anybody, I think, a team that won't be favored to beat Houston, would not be favored to beat Cleveland, would not be favored to beat the Dodgers or the Nationals, I expect. But they can do anything. So really it's all about guys playing up to their abilities, potential execution, and some of them are lugging some baggage out to the field in the postseason. We'll see how it goes.
Two things about the clinching game that struck me that I think were important. One, Drew Pomerantz, who had been terrible in his last start. I think even though Chris Sale has never pitched in the playoffs before, based on the year he's had, the 308 strikeouts, the 17 wins, I think people feel good about him going in game one on Thursday against the Houston Astros. But there are question marks after that in the rotation. And Pomerantz, who has been good all year long, he was coming off that terrible start against Toronto. For him to go out there and pitch as well as he did, and that clincher was huge. And to me, the other thing that was big, Dan, David Price.
Tying runs aboard. 2 out, top of the 7th. Strike three call. We got a fastball over the inside corner.
It was a back-to-back situation for David Price. We had not seen that yet. He pitched back-to-back days. It was the third time he'd pitched in 4 days. He ended up throwing a total of 59 pitches over those 3 days. That's the type of usage you're going to see in the playoffs. And for all that they were saying about being able to use him like Andrew Miller was used last year for the Cleveland Indians, I think you need to test that out before you just do it in the playoffs, particularly with the guy who's been a starter, for them to be able to use David Price that way. Now, of course, there was the whole goofy situation there where John Farrell, the manager of the Red Sox, comes out to the mound to talk to David Price. People think he's going to take him out. Addison Reed, who's warming up, thinks he's taking Price out for Reed. Reed's halfway to the mound, and everybody in the Red Sox dugout is sort of shooing him back.
Yeah, John, you can see John saying, no, 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 he has not made a move. Reed's already coming into the game. John Farrell shaking his head. As soon as he saw that, he was trying to call it off, and then Addison Reed just did a U-turn. What we have here is a failure to communicate.
that's one of those things that I'm sure John Farrell will have a hard time living down. But he made the right decision. He left Price in the game. Price gets out of the bases loaded jam. So not only did they clinch in that game, but I think that they were able to build some confidence and momentum for the way they're going to have to play and the guys that they're going to need to perform in the postseason. It's a postseason, I think, of redemption, not only for Price because of what he's done in the postseason in the past, but we all know the record. It's 0-8 as a starter. But people forget, Pomerantz was a guy last year who gave up the home run to Coco Crisp in Game 3 at Fenway that sealed the sweep with the Cleveland Indians.
Yes, I mean, the team had not given you a lot of confidence in the last turn of the rotation leading into that game on Saturday. Every starter had gone out there and pitched poorly, taking them out of the game early. So you had this kind of notion of, oh my God, it's happening again. They're going to fail. They're going to fold up in October. What's happening here? So, yes, Pomerantz comes out, kind of stopped the bleeding, had a good game against a hard-hitting team that was trying to win the game. I mean, this was not beating Cincinnati on the road or a team that's mailing it in. The Astros had incentive to win that game. They wanted to win the game. They have great hitters, and he shut them down. So, and there had been a whole thing, Chris, with, you know, his velocity's down. He's at his pitch limit, his innings limit for the year. He's never gone this deep into a season, and here it comes. So those kinds of things all conspired to build some confidence, I think. The Price thing, it's a whole nother – there's a whole podcast on Price you could do in one of your later segments of this very fine program, which would be David Price moving forward, what has happened since he got here, what happened to him this year, how he has performed in this role of relief, and where it's going in the postseason. So there's a million tentacles to that.
You're absolutely right. You know, that being said, that we've seen it here before, if he goes out and performs in the postseason in this role, Red Sox fans will – forgive him, I think, for most part. I remember John Lackey being on the mound for the clincher, you know, in 2013. I mean, Lackey had a very, very acrimonious relationship with the fan base here. So if you can get it done in the postseason, that will make everything right. What's interesting to me about this with the Red Sox is, and maybe you, with your institutional knowledge, will know this, but it just seems strange to be in a situation where you just played four games against this team, and now you're going to start a five-game series with them, best of five series with them, in the playoffs. Is that to anybody's advantage? And how strange is that?
Yeah, I think the Sunday game kind of at least gave everybody a day off to take a breather on that intensity, because the first three were played by both teams really trying to win the game. Sunday, you took on the Fort Myers field. It didn't have quite anywhere near the intensity, and everybody kind of had a day off. But people showed, you know, the Astros didn't, they didn't show you Verlander. They didn't show you Keuchel. And you know, they did have to show you their closer. I think they're not that good at catching base stealers, and the Sox are going to be able to exploit that. So some things came out there, but the things that their hitters do are significant, and they have a lot of them. And 7 through 9, they've got guys that can hurt you down at the bottom of that lineup. So the Sox, they already knew it, but generally the scouts know it, and the people doing the reports know it. You know, these guys are really good, and now we know who they are and how they can hurt us.
What's interesting about this, I think, is that you look at these two teams, and I think that they are opposites offensively. Houston led the majors in runs scored this year, 896 runs. They scored almost 900 runs. They were second in home runs to the Yankees. The Yankees hit 241. Houston hit 238. You look at the Red Sox, they were 10th in the league in runs scored, but the offense was inconsistent for most of the year, and they were 27th in home runs, 168. That's how many home runs they hit in a year in which there were more home runs hit than any other season in the history of baseball. I mean, the Red Sox are sort of known throughout the years for sluggers and just bashing and hitting home runs. So one of my concerns about the Red Sox going into the series is I don't know if they have enough offense to keep up with Houston.
Well, they get shut down by mediocre pitching all the time. They're going to see better than mediocre pitching now. So you're just going to have to hope that, you know, the guys like, you know, Betts, Hanley, you know, guys that had uneven years to a degree, especially Hanley, get going during the playoffs. Hanley has a pretty good record in the playoffs. He's pretty much impervious to pressure, doesn't really feel anything, same guy. So that plays in your favor at this point. But yes, they need to be at the top of their games, because their regular game offensively is not as good as Houston's regular game offensively. And, you know, the pitching comes into play and all that. But what you say is correct. It still comes down to the notion that they're not as good as Houston, but they can be in a short series.
Are you at all nervous about the situation on the base paths? I mean, the Red Sox are a really aggressive team. They led the majors in outs on the base paths this year with 81. And I go back to, we all know Saturday was the clincher, but they were in that position, in my opinion, because on Friday night, Brock Holt made a terrible decision to try and advance on, I mean, it wasn't even a wild pitch or a pass ball. It's just the catcher it bounced right to him, and he got up and threw him out. It bothers me how aggressive they are on the bases, Dan, because I feel like, yes, you need to take the extra base when you don't hit home runs, but to me, they don't factor in situations. Like, you had your best hitter at the plate there at Mookie Betts, and it's two outs, so on any contact you're running, and Holt can run a little bit, and he ends up getting thrown out and ending the inning. To me, there's been too many of those situations this year, and I just worry about in a playoff game, especially in a short series, one bad base running mistake could cost you the series.
Yeah, there's a likelihood that there'll be one that you come back to and say, oh my God, they kept doing that. What bothers me about them is they're stubborn about it. It's one thing to be aggressive and to push the defense to make mistakes. That's great, but there's smart baseball decisions, and they didn't make them repeatedly during the year. And they're headstrong about it. It's like, this is what we do. This is how we do this. We're going to keep doing it. And it might come back to bite them. They got five games against the Astros to find out, but it would not be a surprise to see one of these brain lock moments that you just referenced be something that's talked about for years.
All right, the Red Sox will open up that American League Division Series against the Houston Astros in Houston on Thursday. Chris Sale against Justin Verlander should be really interesting. Dan, thank you for coming in, being a part of this inaugural podcast. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Chris. Good luck with the show.
Thank you. All right, we're going to flip things over now to the Patriots, and they have to get things together. A team that a lot of people thought could go 19-0 has the same record as the New York Jets, 2-2, after a quarter of the season. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Season Ticket. As promised, now we're going to talk about the New England Patriots, and that means we are joined by Boston Globe national NFL writer Ben Volen. Ben, you were at the game yesterday, as was I. When you look at it, the Patriots are now 2-2 on the year. They lose 33-30 to the Carolina Panthers.
Bozzie Whitaker with room. Touchdown, Carolina. Newton, end zone, alone again. Touchdown, Funchess. Newton keeps. Lowers his shoulder and takes it in for the touchdown.
And my takeaway a quarter of the way through the season is this defense has major, major issues.
I'm sorry, Chris. Could you speak up for a second? I'm having trouble communicating with you here. We're having some communication issues here on the podcast, much like the Patriots defense. What an abomination that was yesterday. It's the same team just about that they're bringing back from last year that won the Super Bowl. Swap out Logan Ryan, swap in Stephon Gilmore, and they're just having breakdowns all over the place. We saw it in week one when Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt were just having track meets up and down the field. And then we saw it yesterday, you know, a 28-yard walk-in touchdown basically on a screen pass is inexcusable for this defense. And just anytime you see them pointing at each other and talking and not quite sure what to do before the snap, something bad's about to happen. And it's happened a lot, I think four times yesterday.
You know, it's so unusual, too, for a Bill Belichick coach team, because if the Patriots are known for anything, Ben, it's attention to detail. It's being one step ahead of the opposition. It's always being the team that's a little more erudite than the opposition. They're thinking. They're the thinking man's team. And here you have them making all kinds of mental mistakes and just giving easy touchdowns. You referenced the Fozzie Whitaker one. There was another one to Devin Funchess where Eric Rowe and Gilmore messed up a coverage and let him go wide open into the end zone. And you look at this and you say, okay, we're a quarter of the way through the season. Is this fixable? You know, is it a situation where Stephon Gilmore is just not a fit and they gave him the big free agent contract in the offseason, $65 million? Is he just not a fit?
I think eventually he will be, but it's funny. I can't help but think back of the video clip that I found when they signed Gilmore to that massive $65 million contract, and you type his name into Google. One of the first plays that comes up is this long touchdown to Chris Hogan last year, and he beats Stephon Gilmore. And at the end of the play, Gilmore gives up on the play before the goal line, and he turns to yell at his teammate for a communication error. And if that's not the perfect example of what's happening so far this year, and it's baffling to me because they have guys who have a track record of success of playing smart football, Devin McCourty, Malcolm Butler, Patrick Chung, even Daron Harmon, who's now a team captain, and then Gilmore, they gave this massive contract to. It's amazing to me that they keep having these massive breakdowns. And guys, Kelvin Benjamin on one pass yesterday, there was no defender within 15 yards of him. That's totally inexcusable.
Newton wide open is Benjamin. And Kelvin Benjamin, with a man to beat, is tripped up by Daron Harmon.
you know, obviously you have to turn to the new piece and Stephon Gilmore, and he just always seems to be in the neighborhood when they have these breakdowns.
He looks lost in translation. He does. But I sort of feel, at some point yesterday, I'll be honest with you, Ben, I was like, this is on the coaching staff now.
We absolutely have to take a hard look at Matt Patricia and the coaching staff. At some point, you know, we have to sit here and say, well, they're not coaching it well enough. And you have to wonder, you know, coming this offseason, if everyone on the team, if their attention is where it needs to be. You have a coaching staff and players who won a Super Bowl in dramatic fashion. They've been told all summer how brilliant they are and how great they are. Stephon Gilmore coming off signs for $65 million. Malcolm Butler, his contract this offseason, is that distracting? There are all these things kind of swirling around the team right now, and with as poorly as they're playing, I think it's absolutely fair to question if the motivation and the focus and attention to detail is there right now.
You know, one good thing for them defensively yesterday was getting Dante Hightower back. I think that helped them, and I think he'll get better and he'll play more snaps. But let me just throw some numbers at you, and you let me know what you think about some of these numbers. The Patriots are 32nd in the NFL in yards allowed per game, 456.8. They're 31st in points allowed, 32 a game. That's only because the Indianapolis Colts got it handed to them last night against the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle. That's the only team that's allowed more points. The Patriots have allowed 324 passing yards per game, which is 32nd in the NFL. Is this fixable?
What's, you know, not to sound like the ultimate homer here, but I do think it's fixable. Again, it's not like these are players that have no business playing in the NFL. These are guys with Pro Bowls on their resume. They're all pretty much in their prime. Malcolm Butler, Gilmore, McCourty, they're all in the prime of their careers right now. So these are just mental errors. These are things that this is the hallmark of the Patriots program, being able to fix these things. So I do think that these are fixable, but they got to put a lot of work into it and a lot of effort. And obviously coming up here with a short week and facing a tough offense in Tampa Bay with DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans and O.J. Howard and Jameis Winston, it's going to be difficult trying to fix these things in just 3 days.
How strange is it to look at the standings in the AFC East and the Patriots, a team we thought could go 19-0, has the same record as the New York Jets, a team that a lot of people thought could go 0-16 and is basically just playing for the number one pick.
It feels like bizarro world, especially with the Buffalo Bills in first place right now at 3-1. Look, I still think everything is still in front of them, the division title, getting to the AFC Championship game, all that, but it looks a lot more precarious now than it did just 4 or 5 weeks ago in the preseason.
Yeah, there's sort of a saying about the Patriots, and it's especially under Bill Belichick, they're going to be better in December than they are in September. That's a way of saying they will get better. I think a lot of teams, if they had struggled in the manner the Patriots have through the first 4 weeks and they were expected to be a juggernaut, there would be panic. But because it's Tom Brady, because it's Bill Belichick, I think people just expect them to figure it out because, frankly, they always have. And I think that's why there's not maybe the level of consternation there would normally be. I think people are disappointed, but nobody's ready to write off the season because you just say, well, it's Brady, it's Belichick. They always find a way.
Yeah, I guess when you win 5 Super Bowl rings, you have the benefit of the doubt, I guess. So, you know, we've seen this movie before where they start off 2-2 and have all kinds of issues. But, you know, that doesn't mean we shouldn't put the magnifying lens up to the roster and to the coaching staff.
Which leads me to this. I think people would be interested. You do the film review for the Boston Globe every week. You go back and break it down and really get in-depth into maybe what went wrong and what went right for the Patriots. I'm curious, how do the players respond? Have you ever had a player come up to you and say, no, you know, you were wrong about that, or I read what you wrote and, you know, you're being too critical of me? How do the players respond to your film reviews and your criticism?
Total silence. Total silence. I've never once heard from a player about that. Maybe they're just not reading. I think it's very
possible.
No,
you're too good. You're too good. They're definitely reading. They're definitely reading.
But, you know, I'm always available. I'm always there every Wednesday if anyone does take an issue with it. But I don't come out with hot takes usually when I review the film. It's usually pretty steady, and you know, I try to point to facts or specific plays. And I readily admit when we don't know who made the communication breakdown. We just know that there was one there, and certainly I think that's going to be the case tomorrow. Was it McCourty who was supposed to make this play, or was it Stephon Gilmore? I don't know, but those two guys definitely have to figure it out. And you know, it's rewarding when I, you know, when you do a film review and, like, I noticed after the Super Bowl, like, boy, the Falcons really clogged the middle of the field, and then the Patriots had much better success in the second half when they were throwing the ball to the outside. And then you watch Do Your Job Too, and the coaches are kind of breaking all that down. So that's a very rewarding feeling. But never have gotten into it or gone toe-to-toe with a player before, and that's probably a good thing because they have about a foot and a half and 150 pounds on me.
Yeah, I don't think although you did do that training with Stephon Gilmore in Carolina, right? When he got signed, you went down there and did his offseason program with his personal trainer.
And I think maybe one of the issues of Stephon Gilmore is his workouts aren't hard enough. If I'm completing the workout, maybe Stephon Gilmore needs to work harder in the offseason.
That's actually a pretty good point, Ben. Those film reviews are great, though, because there's a saying that they have in the football culture, and it's the eye in the sky doesn't lie. So you can say whatever you want, but that film is going to tell you the truth. And I think that's why that film review is something that's important. And I'm sure Bill Belichick's going to have the Patriots reviewing a lot of film here as they get ready on a short week for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers down in Tampa on Thursday. Thanks, Ben. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for I'm glad we were able to fix these communications.
I feel like
issues.
We communicated much better than the Patriots did.
Yeah.
Much better.
Great rotations and handoffs.
There were some nice handoffs there. Yeah, I think we were on the same page. Good flow. All right. Thanks, Ben. Finally, a segment we call the Cheap Seats here on Season Ticket.
Gostkowski banks it in.
That was Steven Gostkowski kicking a Patriots record and career-long 58-yard field goal. Now, Gostkowski, as I mentioned, has been criticized a little bit for missing extra points. He missed one in the 2015 AFC Championship game against Denver that people remember. He actually missed one in the Super Bowl last year. That's one of the reasons the Patriots needed those two-point conversions to get back into the game and tie it. So maybe what they should do is move the extra point back to 58 yards or 50-plus yards, and Gostkowski won't have any issue there with the extra point. He's one of the better kickers in the league. I know there are some people who don't think he's as good as he was in the past. I'll be honest with you, I've covered this guy since his rookie year. He's a really good kicker, and he proved it to you once again on Sunday. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher to subscribe, and make sure you tell a friend about this podcast. And for more great sports stories, subscribe to the Boston Globe. Make sure you listen to us tomorrow. We have a very special guest, Red Sox President of Baseball Operations, Dave Dombrowski. He's going to talk about the season and break down the playoff series with the Houston Astros. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.